The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine.
The first article is titled, Leslie and Charles Renfro Sr. In 2019, Leslie and Charles Renfro Sr. climbed 300 steps in Costa Rica. At the top of the staircase was a cable suspended hundreds of feet in the air for them to zip line across. They were 68 and 75 years young at the time, respectively. Some people didn't make it to the top, and they were younger than us, says Charles, a retired professional, with a laugh. That made me feel good. He and his wife of 25 years are the poster couple for living your best life after 60. Like the happy fit seniors we see power walking in TV ads, except a bit more adventurous. They're always globe-trotting. South Africa, Zimbabwe, Alaska, Haiti, Aruba, and elsewhere with their travel group. Charles calls it cramming for the finals. When you get to be my age, the only thing that matters is time, says the Alabama native who now lives in Hempstead, New York. We can always make more money, but we can't get more time. Speaking of time, Leslie likes to spend hers living like it's golden. I've done simulated skydiving, zip lining, parasailing, bike riding, and we've done a couple of marathons together, says Panama-born teacher, now retired in Hempstead. And when she says marathon, she's talking the big leagues, like cycling 40 miles in the TD 5 Borough Bike Tour and running 13 miles in the Long Island Half Marathon. The Renfros believe the key to their happy marriage is friendship, respect, putting God first, and being open to a Sunday afternoon drive that leads to a spontaneous trip. We might take a ride to this vegetarian restaurant I love in North Carolina, Charles says. We'll have dinner in Charlotte, spend the night, and get up the next day to come home. Leslie is always down for the road trip, but she draws the line at her hubby's annual polar bear plunge. I'm a polar bear watcher, she jokes. For me, a change, she enjoys her spot on the sand as her husband braves the ocean. The next article is titled Redemption Songs. In the Deep South, a massive new museum exposes the whole truth of this nation's slavery legacy and pays homage to the sanctity of Black life. Brian Stevenson, activist and author, is a man seemingly ordained to fight for freedom. The soft-spoken jurist is so purpose-filled that if he came here just to do his narrative work or just to represent the least of those on Alabama's state-sanctioned death list, he would have lived an honorable life. But somehow, some way, this knowledgeable man of law and history, as well as struggle and resistance, knows what redemption requires: the whole truth. And so he worked tirelessly to both narrate and change this great, violent, enduring American saga. At 62, Stevenson, the founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative, EJI, has been defending primarily impoverished Black people on Alabama's death row for more than 30 years. His work and story were featured in the 2019 documentary True Justice and the film Just Mercy, starring Michael B. Jordan. There came a day, however, when Stevenson realized that working solely within the justice system wouldn't be enough to bring about lasting change. It was about 15 years ago that I began to fear "We would not win Brown versus Board of Education today," he says. "I'm not sure our courts today would do something as disruptive as Brown in the current political climate." Stevenson says when he began to realize that the Brown decision had been accompanied by years of narrative work and decades of activism, he also realized that we have to start talking more outside the courts about this history. This is where his narrative work, which seeks to honor the truth about this nation's legacy, began. In April 2018, EJI opened the National Memorial for Peace and Justice to document the nation's horrific history of lynching Black people, and the Legacy Museum, from enslavement to mass incarceration, in downtown Montgomery, Alabama. What Stevenson does so well, so beautifully, with both these sites is bear witness to the lives of those taken from us so violently, while also creating a space for catharsis and possible redemption. There just aren't museums in this country like this one, he notes, and I think the absence of truth-telling spaces about our history is a real vulnerability in American society. First, water. The Legacy Museum, which has expanded to 40,000 square feet and now also includes a Black-owned restaurant, begins with one of America's gravest sins, slavery, and connects those chains to the ones worn by millions locked away in cages under what we now term mass incarceration. When you enter the museum, you are immediately immersed in darkness. In the simulated experience of a rocking ship, the terror is palpable. PTSD bubbles in the blood. You are reminded of the 2 million or more who died in the passage across the Atlantic, taken by sickness or despair, jumped or thrown overboard. This whole thing about the ocean and what the ocean represents is a relatively new understanding for me, says Stevenson, who adds that he had never been to Africa until about 10 years ago. I went to Nigeria and a young lawyer met me. It was like 1 in the morning, and he said, "I'll show you Lagos." And we drove around to all these places. I was so tired. And eventually he said, "One more place." Stevenson shakes his head ruefully, remembering, "We climbed over a concrete barrier to get to the beach," he recalls. "It wasn't a particularly attractive beach. It was the middle of the night. And we got there and just stood." He said, "I brought you here because I wanted to say I'm sorry. This is where we lost you." And I realized that I was standing on the other side of the ocean for the first time in my life. And I am part of this community of lost children of that continent. And that consciousness really began to impact me. At the Legacy Museum, after experiencing the simulated rocking ship, you walk through a middle passage of sorts, meant to mirror the ocean floor. On either side of you lie beautiful African people, men and women, aunties and babies, mommies and sistren, lovers, sons, and friends, all sculpted by artist Kwame, and all lost, strewn and scattered on the Atlantic floor. "We do things with water in this space," says Stevenson. "I think until people begin to get their mind around it, they don't actually understand what it represents. And that's part of why I feel it's so important. We have a film in one of the theaters in which people in Africa talk about what it was like to hear the stories of great-grandparents who were taken away, lost to the sea. They called them the Lost Ancestors, and that connection is really important. So, if we can find ways to talk about these aspects of history, new insights emerge. Traversing our legacy. The Legacy Museum deftly uses technology via holograms and videos to listen to the enslaved and incarcerated. Stevenson notes that the exhibits also delve into the exploration of slavery economics, its brutality and sexual violence, Reconstruction, racial terror lynchings, the Jim Crow era, and mass incarceration. Because the sister site to the museum is the National Lynching Memorial, with free shuttle service between the two, Stevenson says EJI now has the most comprehensive data in the country on lynchings, which at present count stands at nearly 6,500 dead African Americans whose vicious murders took place in nearly every state. When it came to civil rights, Stevenson says he wanted the museum to tell a different story than had been told before, mainly because the fight is so far from over, and there are clear connections between slavery and mass incarceration, and between lynching and the death penalty. He notes that most civil rights spaces he's visited skew toward triumph, how in the end the laws change and racism is hopefully over. While he applauds this optimism, he is concerned that such accounts can set us up to believe we have accomplished more than we actually have. So what we wanted to talk about was the intense resistance to civil rights, to immigration, to all those leaders, he says, not just by Klan members, but also governors and senators, legislatures, and judges who were saying, segregation forever. Of course, there has always been resistance to any forward movement for Black folk. With today's dog whistles about critical race theory, CRT, and the 1619 Project, Stevenson's is clear that this resistance is part of a continuum in the American narrative. Yet, with CRT specifically, he is flume-moxed by the way it has been weaponized against people of color. I'm a little surprised that someone could take a really complex legal theory, a way of thinking about the law, and turn it into a threat to elementary school kids, he says. It's just sort of laughable to me. This far by faith. And yet there is grace, even amid the intense emotions provoked by many of the museum's installations. After the main area, a new reflection space honors around 400 people who resisted racial injustice, and a world-class gallery nourishes the soul with work from some of our most celebrated Black artists, including Glenn Ligon, Elizabeth Catlett, Allison Saar, and Gordon Parks. Stevenson's core philosophy is that we are each far greater than the worst thing we have ever done. It's part of why he spent so much of his career representing condemned prisoners and people in jails and prisons. He applies the precept to those who do us harm. 2. In church, we are taught that the pathway to redemption and restoration and salvation requires confession and repentance, he reflects. We actually are capable, in this country, of talking honestly about this history and surviving, and not just surviving, but getting to a better place. The veteran lawyer points out how much progress has been made in other areas, including domestic violence and sexual harassment. It's been achieved even with drunk driving. After MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, very effectively forced a conversation about consequences for operating a vehicle while intoxicated. In the same way, we have to talk about this history, he insists. We have to model that we can actually tell the whole truth to each other and survive. In fact, the only way we can survive is if we tell the truth. The next article is titled, The Friendship Reset. As the pandemic forced people to manage a myriad of emotional changes, many friendships suffered too. Now is a great time to figure out how to fix them or move on. Whether a relationship was solid or already going through a shift, many of us found that our social circles, like just about every other aspect of our lives, were altered by the COVID-19 pandemic. What was brought to the forefront was, which of my relationships have been superficial? Notes Brittany Noel, a licensed therapist and confidence coach. Many times when we go out to brunch or we go shopping with people in our lives, we may be enjoying the experience even if we're not actually having communications that increase intimacy. But when life gets tough, as it did during the pandemic, only certain types of friendships are able to sustain a real connection. And those are the friendships that force us to share a deeper level of vulnerability, of transparency. During lockdowns, meetups decreased substantially, as did basic communication. And relationships that were more challenged by social distancing mandates are now left in a state of flux. But friendships in transition are still beneficial, says the Great Girlfriends podcast co-founder Sybil. You just have to shift your expectations. It tightens the load for each of us when we start to take the value of what's there and build on it, instead of thinking everyone has to be everything at all times, she explains. It eliminates any pressure we have imposed on our friends. Think of the new year as a fresh start, one that presents an opportunity to hit the reset button on our friendships, whether we are hoping to repair them, create boundaries within them, or move on from them altogether. Essence spoke with experts and women like you to figure out how to take those next steps. Making amends. New Yorker Andrea and her best friend from Charlotte, North Carolina, have a bond that has survived everything from their college years to living a long distance apart. Then COVID-19 happened. Andrea wanted to talk to her BFF about all they were going through, but her friend wasn't giving back that energy. Andrea reached out often to try to maintain the connection, but the favor wasn't reciprocated. I spoke to her about it, but I feel like nothing really changed, she says. It can be draining when you feel like you're pouring yourself out, but you're not being poured back into by people who are close to you. I was like, I'm over this. That's not the way a best friend behaves. Yet, despite her frustration, Andrea didn't really want the relationship to end. When dealing with lulls in a friendship, it is important to step outside of yourself. Try to consider and understand that your friend's world is bigger than you. A Muti says, you are a very important piece, but a fractional piece.
I think it's so important for us as friends to be able to say to each other, how has this pandemic been affecting you? Or how has this pandemic changed the way you view friendships? From there, honesty is necessary to get to a place of understanding. When Andrea and her BFF finally talked, Andrea discovered that her friend had been battling depression. Their long history of openness and vulnerability helped them move forward. It just took us sitting down and talking and understand what was going on, she says. We were both going to go through a lot of challenges, and we were going to change, and we were going to have moments where we just need a clue about how to support each other. All it takes is some communication. Embracing change. As you move into the new year and try to salvage some friendships or step away from others, be generous when discussing what both parties need. One of the greatest questions you can ask and be asked is, how can I support you? Amuti says, and I think that the best thing we can offer all of our relationships is vulnerability and the assurance that we all need each other. Noel advises us to throw no one away. Instead, prioritize people you can go deeper with. Ask yourself, is this someone I still feel connected with? Can I talk to this person about my vision, my hopes, my dreams, and walk out of that interaction feeling motivated and seen and heard? When you learn to value connection over company, you naturally gravitate toward people who want to see you do well, she says. Those are people who are willing to resolve conflict when it comes up, because the purpose of your relationship is so much greater. Choosing an exit. Desire Christopher, a model, was living and working in New York City when the pandemic lockdown began. Suddenly, she found herself out of work. She returned to her native Atlanta, seeking emotional support, including from her closest friend. Instead, she received judgment about how she dressed, how she talked, even the handbags she carried. I was already stressed and I was drinking a lot, she says, and I felt I had to meet the needs and standards of someone else, who you thought was your friend and there to uplift you. She did her best to defend herself, but depression became a point of contention. My friend wouldn't ask me to hang out anymore, Christopher recalled. She let me know, you embarrass me. For Christopher, the relationship began to be detrimental to her mental health, and she often felt as if she were under attack. When you choose to leave an unhealthy friendship, Amuti says, the withdrawal doesn't have to be ugly. You can never control anyone else, but you can control the way that you move forward, she advises. You can control your ability to offer someone a blessing. You can control your ability to extend love and light when you see the person. And you control your gestures toward that person moving forward. Christopher has since returned to New York City and is mentally in a better place. She's now back at work and has chosen to peacefully let go of that toxic relationship. Make the most of your connections. The experts say it's important to compartmentalize friendships as opposed to cutting them off when they change. Here's how advice on how to have healthier, happier relationships with close, not so close, and not for now friends. Hold people loosely. Give people the grace to come into your life for that moment and to fulfill whatever you both might need in that moment, while also knowing that that moment can end, says licensed therapist Brittany Noel. And when it does end, stay open to gracefully allowing that moment to evolve into whatever it needs to be. Appreciate what your friends brings. If you both love fashion, then go to the fashion show together, says the Great Girlfriends podcast host, Sybil Amuti. If you both love business, then talk about entrepreneurship. Find the points of intersections and build from there. When things change, communicate. Allow people to grow in the ebb and flow of life. And understand that this may be a season of closeness in your connection, and it may be a season of distance, Noel says. By keeping the lines of communication open, you'll be more able to navigate these seasons. Creating boundaries. We've always had a judgment-free kind of relationship, says 911 dispatcher Samantha Hawkins from Powder Springs, Georgia, of her rapport with her best friend. It's why we connected so well. As a black woman and a white man in a platonic friendship, they managed to converse often and productively about hot button political issues. That remained true until COVID fatigue changed everything. Initially, we both were on the same page that this is a real issue, Hawkins recalls. As a firefighter, he was seeing the cases up close, and I was taking the calls. But by September 2020, he started to tire of it. While her good friend became more lax with COVID-19 safety precautions and skeptical about vaccines, Hawkins remained vigilant about protecting herself and her loved ones. When he invited her to his wedding, she felt safety measures wouldn't be a priority, and she didn't attend. From there, she set new boundaries within her friendship, choosing to no longer meet up in person. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.